specifically for horse racing. Naira Betts. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Betts. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, and second half on the morning. Oh, it's actually a little less than the second half because it's already 10:45. I just am seeing sometimes, you know, I don't I look at Twitter during the course of the show, but sometimes I miss requests and the like. So I did not see our friend Jeff asking about the 2023 New York racing dates. And, I mean, I think the dates, well, certainly Saratoga is easy enough to lock in. And that you know, is always all you got to do is work backwards from Labor Day, obviously, and you know, to the opening day, that part won't be any different. And I'm gonna guess, I imagine, because we really haven't had the conversation yet with Andrew Offerman. I mean, other than mentioning that Andrew is coming in as the racing director, and certainly excited on that front for Andrew. And you know, something of a return, right? Because he had been here years ago. So I wonder if some of this is waiting for, you know, for Andrew to get in place, you know, and have input. Vice President, I'm just looking up the new, what the title, essentially General Manager of Operations, but it's, you know, it's the racing side of the business, so, and more, but I will text rather than speculate, I will reach out for Pat McKenna. And I'm not going to, I already know if I was to ask Andy that, Andy would he would roll his eyes. I'm just responding to our friend, and when I said to you that we were hoping for a visit from a young horseman, Riley Mott, but we're going to put that off for maybe tomorrow or Thursday. All right, so we will get to Riley, who won his first race the other day, and absolutely, as I wrote to him, first of many. Undoubtedly. And, you know, Riley, at first I thought that he was going out, we'd heard he was going out on his own, and, you knew that that was only a matter of time. I thought he was only going to start at Oaklawn, but in fact, with his third starter unifying, this came, on Thursday. I didn't even get a chance on Friday, obviously, to mention it. So congratulations, Florent Giroux aboard. And this came for Sherry Greenberg, Staghawk Stables, Tom Reinman, and Ron Johnson. And a Union Rags two-year-old filly providing Riley with his first win. So pretty exciting. I think it was his third starter, right? Or is it a second? Second? It was unifying second start, but a third overall that he had sent out. But he's going to be at Oaklawn, and can look forward to a long, successful career. Best wishes. But I can't wait to talk. I mean, Riley, obviously. Grew up on a pretty elite shed row. he saw some good ones, to say the least, and he's had his hands on a lot of good ones working for his dad. So we'll talk to Riley soon. Andy's just a couple of minutes away. That question by Jeff makes me. I'm glad this popped up because I did notice something in my mail yesterday. It was a little surprising when I saw the headline. Let me spin through here. There it is. Here's a little. Maybe I will get Pat on here after Andy. I saw an email that came from Naira. Premium full season seating options available already for 2023. And it features the 1863 and the stretch, that section, the still fairly new section. So I would suggest, if that's something that you want to get out ahead of, you may do well to go to the website, and when you click on the ad that they sent, it takes you to the Saratoga specific portion of the web. There's the three drop downs in the upper left hand corner. There's the three drop downs: Belmont, Saratoga, Aqueduct. So this takes you to Saratoga. So if you didn't get this email, and you want to find more information, I would suggest that you go there. And I mean, the fact that you could buy the season passes. I'm just looking at this. This includes. I'm definitely going to get a hold of Pat on this, because I don't. Is it always this early? That I don't recall it seeing this early. Maybe it's just usually the first season pass thing. I always remember seeing is from Stewart's, right, when they start selling the season pass. I mean, if you buy even general admission, if you're going to go you know, if you're going to go to Saratoga more than, I think, 10 times, 9, 10 times, the season pass pays for itself. A little bit different, you know, obviously, if you want to upscale the experience and you know, and also, of course, there's the waiting list, you know, much like New York Giants season tickets and, you know, so many sporting event season tickets where you have to essentially put yourself on a waiting list and you have to wait for families to you need families to die out before you can get your hands on season tickets. I mean, you know, they get passed down, right? I mean, there's people that have been sitting essentially in the same seats at the Giant games, you know, since Yankee Stadium. I'm not kidding. The polo grounds. Well, Tina and I are, we're on a waiting list for Eagles season tickets. And, you know, it's funny. There were, I guess this year, actually, there was the opportunity because the schedule is so weird. I've mentioned this before. All right, Leslie. Thank you, Leslie. I agree. Leslie Knopf and Leslie's great for this kind of stuff. She says it. She also does not remember it being this early, usually in January. All right, so maybe we'll get Pat at the top of the hour. Right now, though, Andy, I think Andy's ready for us. And I'm excited because, again, this week I'm going to we're going to start the conversation with Andy about movies because he tweeted out yesterday that he saw The Fabelmans, and I cannot wait. Andy, good morning.
Morning. Why are we talking about a movie that nobody's seen besides me?
That's because you're the only you're the only resource.
We'll wait till January. Everybody's seen it.
When's the widespread release? Do you know?
I think next week.
All right. Well, this is the Spielberg sort of biopic-ish, and it just looks wonderful. I mean, it has that.
It is one.
It is everything about it. Really, we're dying to see any movie, honestly, and you're driving me crazy because you've been seeing one thing after another for weeks, and you keep telling me there's a lot of good movies out, and I haven't had a chance to go see anything.
Well, I think she said opens up in Saratoga this week. It's pretty good. I like that.
I'm gonna absolutely get where Tina and I are. We're gonna go. Because we've been saying the same thing that, you know, we haven't seen the thing in ages. I'm tired of waiting for stuff or you know, stuff being on the streaming channels, you know.
Well, I think there's a bunch of movies coming out of Netflix that are good. They're coming out in December, like White Noise, and there's a new Inarritu movie. It was called. I know it's had some screenings, but I think it's December 16th on Netflix. Anyway, whatever.
All right. Well, I'm Fabelman's top of my list. Andy, just had an extensive conversation with Dave Grenick in the past hour or so, and we started to sidle up to the holiday season, the former Holiday Fest, and so we were doing some of that. But I have not had a chance. I was on the move from Florida and Kentucky over the weekend. I really have not had a chance to talk about what went on this past week at Aqueduct.
What did go on this past week at Aqueduct?
Well, they did the right thing, saving those two turf stakes for Sunday, because they were originally, you know, going to be Saturday, and they would have come off. So that was smart.
They were originally Saturday and Sunday. They moved one from Saturday to Sunday.
Well, but you know what I mean, to get them both.
I don't know.
To get them
I'm
both.
Sure
right. Well, what? and you know, and this is a tough. You know, Dave was actually, you know, he brought up the, you know, what hopefully is not going to be a difficulty because there's some nice turf stakes you know, typically run this time of year, and we're suddenly getting beset, you know, by some, you know, cold and wet weather, which there's no saving us from that when it comes to the turf at this time of year.
Yeah, I mean, it's all you can do. I mean, we run for three, you know, 2.5 months on the course as opposed to the usual month, and we just had a very rainy fall. Listen, we've had a lot of good fortunate weather over the last few years, and this fall was a bad one. What are you going to do? And it came at an inopportune time for us because we're racing at Aqueduct for 3 months as opposed to 2 months at Belmont and a month at Aqueduct on the turf. So, as it is, I think the book that came out, there's no turf racing after Thanksgiving weekend. That's the end. I think there's a couple of turf stakes this weekend. I think the following weekend has the Long Island and the the Red Smith, and also the turf sprint for Phillies and for Phillies and Mares for Colts. So I mean, that's sort of the end. And so we'll lose the next, you know, we'll lose a week. It's unfortunate, but that's just, you know, what are you going to do? You have to make the best of the situation. The combination of using the course a lot and an inordinate amount of rain, which overall is a good thing, but not for our racing.
No, no, I know.
You sit around and cry about it.
Well, especially, and Dave, I thought, brought up a germane point, which is, given the situation in Kentucky and even now apparently at Fairgrounds, those options might have been attractive for some end of the season, you know, targeting by horsemen, you know, to maybe come to town for any of those three races.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
What else is going on?
Give us a quick survey of the weekend and winter memories. Salima and one handily. This is one of Stephanie Seymour's under her name for Chad. And
yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah, an El Kabir.
That was just really good. She's really improved a lot quickly. It's you've seen a lot. It's just another situation of a horse that broke its maiden with a mediocre fig down at Tampa has, you know, proven that was just a stepping stone. And those Tampa maiden breakers at times have been very successful for Chad Brown. So, yeah, she's terrific. She was very, very good in there. The others were just overmatched. We'll see what they do, whether they're putting her away until later in the spring, or then they bring her back at Tampa. I guess we'll see, but she's been good. The only race she's 3-for-4, and the one race she lost, she had an impossible trip off a long layoff.
That Eminent Victor went off favored, and really no impact, right?
No, she wasn't really a factor. She ran mediocrely. Really, the winner is the only one that ran. The rest of them were just sort of clunking along behind her. Maybe the Eminent Victor was never really that good, and just sort of a horse that had some success earlier in the year. It happens. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, right?
Yeah, this what's nice is, at least, you know, it wasn't what was impressive. I mean, it wasn't much of a pace, and what they call the course Sunday, Andy, yielding. It was yielding. All right, so 24-1, 49 flat, 114. In the Artie Schiller, which came an hour later, Rosario aboard for Christoph and the Reeves. Big Everest, the Gurkha gelding, wire to wire.
It was a race that's much more notable for the fact that most of the field is scratched for whatever reasons. Pretty much every legitimate horse in the race scratched. And it just changed the whole complexion of the race. Big Everest is a horse that's extremely fortunate. I mean, none more than this race, where every single possible speed scratch. So he was able to sort of waltz along in the front end. That's why he was a heavy favorite in there. But he's very dressed up. I mean, he's gotten enormously fortunate trips in races. And in this particular race, really, Palo Alto was the only horse that seemed particularly tough, and he didn't run that well either. Most of the running was done inside, but Big Everest is all dressed up to lose at a short price in his next start.
Well, and that's that. There's the old trips and traps. There's the opportunity to.
Well, I think if you don't understand that races are won sometimes by horses that are fortunate recipients of good trips, and then you make some comment after they lose the next time, you don't understand dynamics, you just don't understand racing. Or you could focus on assuming jockeys are cheating every race.
There were a couple of other, you know, beside the two turf stakes, there were a couple of efforts that Rosa Veloce.
Yeah, that was interesting. There were two divisions of that 6.5 furlong race. The third race featured a turn of a Chad Brown Klarovich horse that was overwhelming favorite that did not run at all. Horse that had benefited from a gold rail first time. I wish I could have found. I wish the horse McGean, I like the second division, but in that race could have made a lot of money. But that race got an 80 buyer. It went 1.72 seconds slower than the other division, seventh race, where I don't know where Rosa Veloce came with that race. I know she had run well in her prior race against an off the turf field, but wow, 1.02 buyer for her. And Begoyne, who ran, you know, a huge race in defeat, horse that run second in the fantasy earlier this year. And she ran a huge race too, but she lost where Rosa Veloce for Rob Atkins really ran over skin in that race. A huge race. And you knew it was a huge number because it was hard to believe that the winner, Charlie Baker's horse in the race, didn't run a number close to 80. And when you're 1.72 seconds faster, 6.5 furlongs, you're talking about a good 10 lengths. So the fact that it's 22 points higher is not surprising at all. It felt right. Perfectly fine. That was a super fast race. They buried the rest of the field. I saw some very idiotic chatter on Twitter. People suggesting that Irad allowed his brother to win. It's sad that people have these ridiculous, forgetting about accusing these guys of cheating, which is sort of disgraceful in and of itself, but it just takes away from the opportunity to learn from races and to understand racing at all, to constantly be looking at them and assuming that all these riders are cheating. You know, it's like any trainer that wins three races in a week is also now a cheater. It's just, I'm not saying everything in the game is on the up and up, and I'm not saying there aren't some results that do surprise you, but to just sort of always assume that these results, it's like, I don't win because people are cheating. No, it's not going to, certainly not going to help you win.
Well, I spent part of last night as I was watching the game. I was also following along at around 8:30, 8:45 when a winner was declared in the Arizona governor's race, and then subsequently got to be treated, Andy, to some really fascinating, very similar scenario. It's like, how can the treasurer? How
but
can,
let's not turn it into a political thing. I really don't.
It's not political.
It is. I don't want to get into it.
All right. It
certainly doesn't benefit me.
Oh, I hear you.
If you want to talk about it, find your political guest to talk about. You know, you and I agree politically, but I'm not going to get into it.
Well, I'm just the notion.
I understand the notion that the answer to things that people are cheating is stupid. We agree.
There you go. Couple of other, you know, because I'm trying to catch up, having been away on what went on, even going back to Breeders' Cup weekend in New York when the season, the Aqueduct fall season started, and you know, a couple of other winners, and in fact, you know, we mentioned Rob Atrus with Rosa Veloce, and of course he had Law Professor, who actually ran fine in the Breeders' Cup. Couple of other notable winners. I'm always happy to see Greeley and Ben, the veteran. It's kind of fun to have him running in New York, and got 16, 15 now with the now.
We want to start allowance.
Yeah, and the for Jeff.
We're really running out of things to talk about quickly.
No, I'm just catching up on, I'm just looking at some of these results that I had not, you know, I didn't have a chance.
I'm glad that my visit gives you an opportunity to look over the charts for Aqueduct. I think that's awesome.
Well, you could.
I'm going to catch up some other things while we're talking. So if I'm not really connected, we'll be fine. Because I got some things to catch up on too. So, you know, why don't you send a siren or something if something comes up that I might be interested in?
Well, you are presiding over this racing. I mean, you know, you are.
Right, and you could have looked at the results beforehand rather than perusing them going, hey, I noticed that David Jacobson won the fourth race. What did you think of that horse? I can get the charts out, too, if you want. We can just go over race by race. Should we do that?
You could do that. I will say this. I do see, every time I look up, I see Kendrick Carmouche winning races.
Okay. There you go.
Right.
Has he been on the show recently? You know, he could be a real filler if you're looking.
No, he had...
likes to talk.
Yeah, he does. There was a milestone. He had a milestone fairly recently, and I think it was the last time we had Kendrick.
Okay. Okay.
I think he won. What did he win? 2,000 to 3,000, 2,500, something like that. You know, in that range.
You know what it is? You're so upset about the Eagles loss that you're just completely unprepared. You're not your usual mildly prepared. You're just completely unprepared. You take a rough night after the Eagles loss?
Well, you stay up.
You didn't lay in 10.5, did you?
No, I did not. You stay up, you know, you stay up watching those games, and it's just, you know, by the time you're done, now it's 11:30, and it takes you another hour to fall asleep, and I'm up at 4.
It's easy being you. And if you get up at 3 in the morning, it's hard.
Exactly. So, you know, then I got to deal with you. I mean, which is, you know, it's just.
Well, it's particularly difficult when you're completely unprepared.
It's not a question of being
mildly prepared, but when you're completely and totally unprepared, then it is a nightmare. And well, I agree. So whether or not that makes it my fault is another debate.
Well, it's not your fault per se. Well, I don't go and like dig up a stack of things to discuss with you. I just, it's always free association.
Always.
It really is. I mean, I don't really. A lot of times it's just you know, ripped from today's headlines, as we say.
Well, I mean, you try politics and movies, and I sort of push them aside. How about books? You read any good books lately, Steve?
Well, this is your other. This, you love this, right? You love just browbeating me on this topic.
Oh, that's right. You don't read. I forgot.
Yeah, I don't read.
Read some racing articles, and then when you're done with that, you get some books.
Well, you know what I did get. I want to thank Mary Perdue. I got. She sent me a copy of Land of Lucy, and looking forward to.
How about Kick the Latch by Catherine Scanlon? Have you tried to get her on the show? Do you not know about Kick the Latch?
I don't think I do.
Joe Avalon bought it for me, but I already owned it, so he probably gave it to somebody who reads, so I'm like, not you. It's a woman writing about life at the racetrack.
Nice.
It's supposed to be very good. I read about The New Yorker. I had it for about a month. I haven't read it. I'm going to start reading it now. I finished a couple other books I was reading. But I think you should read Kick the Latch.
I love it.
And have her on. I'm trying to give you ideas for the show. Though I suggest if you have Catherine Scanlon on the show, read the book first.
Well, yeah.
Or at least get Tina to read it and maybe discuss it with you over dinner.
Tina.
Instead of her just discussing your myriad of faults.
this is, how new is this?
A month. Came out a month ago.
Excellent. Kick the Latch.
Okay. Maybe late September came out. Maybe late September.
Oh, and I see. There you go. September 12th, it was reviewed in The New Yorker.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't
come out, though, for 2 or 3 weeks after it was reviewed in The New Yorker.
Excellent. Well,
New Yorker review was very good, which is why I bought it.
About one woman's fine.
It was great. So.
Wow. Here you go. About one woman's fine, hard life at the racetrack. Kick the Latch, Ruthless Concision, and Artful Mysteries is lightning in a bottle. Excellent. I'm delighted. I'm thrilled because, especially at this time of year, because, you know, we're not far off from, you know, having sort of the year end. You know, there's no better gift ideas. We always do a gift, the gift giving guide and go through the books that, you know, have come out over the last year. Excellent. I had not seen. I haven't even seen chatter about this. And usually, you know, the horse racing community.
We're such a literate crowd, that I'm shocked that it hasn't gotten massive coverage.
Well, this you'll have to acknowledge. There is a disproportionate, given the size of the industry, quote unquote, at least the way it's characterized to us, there does seem to be a disproportionate amount of literature and biography and you know, et cetera.
Really?
Yeah, yes.
Hang on a second. I'm going to disagree, but the vast majority of books that are written about racing are written by people inside the industry. If you were to look at any sort of industries you and I don't follow, no interest in, whatever, there's a disproportionate amount of books written about them. We just don't see them because we're not interested.
Maybe, yeah.
So if you erase all the books written by racing people, and that would include us, what is there? The Lord of Misrule.
Lord of Misrule.
Which got a reasonable amount of attention. It also won the National Book Award,
yes.
If I recall.
Yes, it did.
So for a book that won a National Book Award, I'm sure it was the only National Book Award winner that was probably read by a number of people at the racetrack. But it didn't get widespread. There's a book by Jane Smiley, which I hated. I forget what it was called. I like some of her stuff. It's just I didn't like her book about racing at all. It didn't come across as true. I don't know. How many other books are there? What was the book by her? There was another book, but it wasn't really – it was using racing, but it wasn't really about racing. And there's this, which seems very good, but it's not getting any widespread. Look, it's hard for books to get enormous amounts of – and just because you win a National Book Award, it's not like how many people read Europe Central. So it's hard, Book, people don't read a lot the way they used to, but there are some racing books, but I would say a disproportionate amount.
And I guess just because, I've got a parade of
you're going to get them because these people want you to put them on a show, and rightfully so, and you should.
Yeah, mostly
racing stuff. To get into an outside, there isn't that much stuff, right?
Well, what's interesting is you had this Jennifer Kelly who was an outsider and that had interest, and now she's written even a second book beyond the Sir Barton book. She's writing the one about Bel Air Stud, and Mary Perdue herself. She sort of fell into the book on Land of Lucy. She was a casual interest. Got into it.
But those books are still, and I'm not in any way being disparaging at all.
Sure.
But they're still niche books I'm talking about novels like
right.
This book, people who are writing, those are nonfiction stuff. And listen, they're interesting stories to some people, and that's great. It's really interesting to me. I think it's great that they've written them, but I'm not talking about mainstream stuff. There was the movie Lean on Pete, the indie movie, which not enough people saw. Which is great. I love that movie. It's played a lot on streaming and different things, like Showtimes and HBO and things like that. So it's very available.
Well, this is really good.
I'm
sure a number of people listening were unaware of this. Kick the Latch. Catherine, spelled with an R-Y-N, Scanlan, S-C-A-N-L-A-N. Catherine Scanlan, we will see.
Yeah, I haven't read it yet, but
excellent. Well, and here's a further note. Catherine Scanlan's Kick the Latch vividly captures the arc of one woman's life at the racetrack, the flatland and ramshackle backstretch, the bad feelings and friction, the winner circle and the racetrack bar, the fancy suits and fancy boots, and the particular language of grooms, jockeys, trainers, racing secretaries, stewards, pony people, and hot walkers, everybody. Based on transcribed interviews with a trainer, the novel investigates form and authenticity in a feat of synthesis reminiscent of Charles Renzikoff's testimony. Interesting. All right. Thank you, Andy. As always. The Jane
Skin. It took a long time for something mildly interesting to come out of this visit. I think we're about 25 minutes in before anything of any value was discussed.
I do have to.
No fault of mine.
Never. No.
It's a good thing you're on. It's a good thing Krivman's not on today.
Jane,
he would have really taken you to the woodshed, and rightfully so.
Thank you. They all
can't have the best of show. Privilege berating you. That could be the show that wins the Eclipse for you.
Oh, I'm counting.
Berating of Steve Bick. The best of berating of Steve Bick.
And you mentioned Jane Smiley. She's written a bunch of horse books.
Okay.
right? She has a whole series of them.
I don't think so. I thought maybe she has, but I tried to read one and did not like it. What was? She has a rally somewhere in the last 10 years or 15 years. She has a book that's Horse Heaven. Horse Heaven?
Horse Heaven.
I hated it.
There's also A Good Horse. There's Taking the Reins. There's Mystery Horse.
The horse is hard to find.
She's written five, apparently.
Okay.
It's a series of five.
Yeah, I just didn't like Horse Heaven. I'm sure people did. There were people in this books. I'm sure I like plenty of books that other people don't like, so.
What's your favorite ever? What if you had to pick one?
Picking Winners.
Well, that's a special kind of that's a whole separate topic. Picking Winners.
I haven't read that many books about racing outside of
handicapping.
I haven't read many handicapping books. I think I read Picking Winners. Maybe I read Buyer on Speed.
Yeah.
My $50,000 a year at the racetrack, which is fun. I've read a little Damon Runyon, but not as much as I should have. I read Davidowitz's first book, Betting Thoroughbreds.
Which is brilliant.
It's a great book, no question about it.
Oh, you must have read Steve's book, Betting on Myself.
Oh, yeah. I've been betting on myself and Exotic Betting, I read. And I read Harvey Pack's book, The Early Pete.
Pete won.
You see, you didn't even mention that Pete had a big win. The horse that Marshall named for Pete. Looms Boldly won on Saturday or Sunday. Saturday.
You didn't mention. There it is. The first on Saturday. You didn't mention the horse that was named after me winning.
You're right. I didn't care.
Oh, but Looms Boldly, you cared.
Well, the horse there, you didn't win in New York, Steve. I don't ever mention you on the show. You don't get enough love. You're so unloved.
That's going to engender you to a wide group that if it didn't happen in New York.
I constantly make positive references. Much as I hate you, I constantly make nice references to you on the show. I'm regretting it at this point, but I do. That's all right. Don't worry. I'll get even.
Oh, my God. So good.
Where did the horse named for Steve Bick win?
At Penn National.
Really? Yeah. Were you there?
I couldn't be there.
So the answer is no.
Jesus Christ.
There's always a caveat to everything you can't do. I wasn't prepared because I didn't sleep. There's always a caveat. No, you weren't there.
I was in Kentucky doing the radio show from the Keeneland Sale.
Oh, well, there you go. It's not that far a drive from Kentucky to Penn National.
Oh, that's what I was going to do. Wednesday after the show, I was going to hop in the car and drive to Grantville and then drive back.
He had a tribute horse to you, and you just didn't even care. You wouldn't even, if the horse hadn't won, you wouldn't even mention it. Really disgraceful. The worst. Like a horse sale instead of seeing a horse named for you. They should change the name. Ingrate. They could rechange the horse's name to Ingrate. Horse formerly known as Dick. They could change the name to the horse formerly known as Dick. They can just have a symbol,
It's not fair.
Is he running for a tag? Because if he's in for a tag, I may claim him and retire him. Put the two of you out of the pasture. Anything else?
Unbelievable.
Who's your next guest?
I don't know.
You don't have another guest. Don't worry. You don't need to prepare for them. So just bring them on.
God. Bring Mandy on?
Mandy just got the role.
Mandy,
the only person racing everybody likes, got hired by... that's right. You're not going to have anybody working for Hesod.
I'm going to absolutely have Mandy on. And in fact, I opened the show actually with that was one of the funniest tweets of the past week or so. We should have.
Must have been a slow week.
No, that was funny. I mean, I'm sorry.
I get a lot of amusement out of a lot of tweets. they're not meant to be funny, but they are in fact funny.
No, because you really,
if you want to laugh at tweets, you go to read the responses to some political tweets. If you really want to laugh,
Well,
or you follow what's his name, Ted Heller.
Well, that was a fabulous exchange. You and he have been.
No, he's very funny. Anyway,
I met him a long time ago at a bar downtown. And in fact, it was on my birthday.
He remembers it fondly.
I doubt it. I'm sure he won't remember. But I did meet him. It was very cool. I think it was my 40th birthday, actually.
A long time ago, Steve. Who would remember back then?
Well, exactly. What,
many, many years ago.
My birthday on Sunday. You know, what do you you still.
Oh, shit! What's today's date? Oh, shit. I just realized. I forgot somebody's birthday Sunday. Nope. Thank you for that reminder.
Oh, so now I've done something useful. I came around
No, you just annoyed me. another person would be mad at me. That's all right. They need to get in line. Your birthday's just coming Sunday?
It is.
The gift I give you is that I come on your show.
And it's the
gift that keeps on giving.
It's the gift that keeps on giving.
I'm going to go, Steve. I have some things to do. I have to... hey, I have a book to recommend.
Yeah, go ahead.
Did I talk about that book, The Success Equation, on your show? Maybe I did, right?
You made a reference to it, and you didn't really flesh it out. Go ahead.
No, it's a book about assessing the difference between risk hang on a second, let me find it. Between skill and luck, and evaluating the differences between skill and luck. And it's mostly about investing in sports. It talks a lot about sports. It's written by Michael J. Mabusin, Mabusin. I think I mentioned it on Twitter. And there are a couple of horse racing references, but the reality is that it really does transcribe to racing extremely well. And I think it's something that people, if they get out of the grassy knoll and actually evaluate things they're doing and try to figure things out, you know, the difference between skill and luck and try to understand. I mean, I think we all need to have a healthy amount of introspection in our lives and in our play. You know, were you right for the wrong reasons? Were you
right?
Did you get lucky to be right? Were you genuinely unlucky to be wrong? You know, what took place in the race? I mean, there are going to be times we are going to bet the second or third best horse at cash. The worst handicapper you are, you might bet the fifth best horse and actually cash occasionally, but not often. But to be able to evaluate that and understand the difference between what's skill and what's luck, just in life and just in those evaluations. Yeah, fascinating book. Not that long either. Really, really good book. The
Success Equation. And I did see you make the reference to it. And that I say all the time that, in fact, this came up in reference to Breeders' Cup with Paul Matisse last week when we were doing our postscript. And kind of, you know, what went right, what went wrong, what opinions, you know, in retrospect were really good or really bad. And one of the really difficult parts of not just Breeders' Cup, of any examination, and it's why you need to spend time looking at your plays, what led you to bet the way you did, and then having a really honest assessment of why. So this it's got to be a valuable read then, because that,
yeah, I mean, you know, I think it's I understand, and I would argue that I'm frustrated by it sometimes a little bit as well, the failure to understand why racing has done a lousy job of communicating the things that are the most interesting about the game. I've tried to do it over the years in talking horses. When I have more time to do it, I'm sure I've done okay, and I'm sure I could have done better, but we always could do better. But because, in my opinion, it's the nuances of the game that make it so interesting. The fact that it's complicated is what makes it so interesting. But in reality, I understand, whether I fully agree or not, why television presents it in a more broad way. I'm not saying I would do it all the same myself, but I understand why it's done that way. You don't have an enormous amount of time to go into in-depth discussions. And also the in-depth discussions would mostly bore people because you're trying to appeal to a mass audience. It's very hard. It's a hard, long discussion about doing it. And I think that while, yes, you would like to present it to people as much as you can, it also has to be somewhat self-taught. You have to somehow find, you have to find a way to hook people in. And, you know, maybe you show it to 1,000 people and one of them or two of them realize that they have a real interest. That would be an enormous win, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because it's not for everybody. Nothing is for everybody. Poker's not for everybody. Backgammon's not for everybody. Bridge isn't for everybody. But there are, these are niche games, and racing's the same. I feel that at least by putting it on TV, we have an opportunity to expose it to more people. And in doing so, you are going to get more people involved. It is tough, though, to use that platform to convey the intricacies of the game as well as you could. I would try to do it a little more, but I understand why we don't. But I do think that, you know, what the game is interesting to me because of the myriad of different
permutations.
No, the different different parts of the game, for lack of a better
word.
Right.
All right.
You know, different things to look at. There's so many different things. Nobody's gonna be able to do all of them. And maybe you get some help in some of them, but there's so much to continuously learn no matter how long you're around it. You never go, okay, I got it all, I'm finished. There's so much more going on and it changes too. And I think, you know, the whole concept, if you're not changing, you're falling behind. If you're not moving forward, you're falling behind. But I think the game's endlessly interesting and fascinating, and there's so much you can do to value. And that's why it frustrates me when you have all these crap about, you know, there's so much time and energy wasted about, you know, this jockey's cheating, this trainer's cheating, all this stuff. It's just noise. It's just noise. There probably is somewhere, someplace, some chicanery going on. But for the most part, it's just complete noise. And what it's going to do is it's going to prevent you from moving forward, just being stuck on what, you know, it's like this constant BS about inquiries and so on. It's such a small part of the game. Yeah, I agree. It should be fixed. We should do something about it. There should be uniform rules. I don't disagree. But to act like it's this massive part of the game is just ridiculous, you know? Every inquiry is the worst. Every DQ is the worst decision ever made. You know, it's just nonsense. And we've set the bar at that. Alamuse. Alamuse was the worst decision that will ever be made. Everything else is fighting for second.
Anyway. Well, no, I love that you riffed this because one of the things that is maddening, and there are so many positives about what the internet has provided the game in terms of camaraderie.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of really right. I mean, I've made a lot of good friends on Twitter and you know, since in message boards, more on message boards with some people on Twitter, and there's a lot of terrific people there. But there's this undercurrent of crap. Now, listen, I've muted and blocked the vast, vast majority of them. And listen, in doing so, I've probably muted somebody that I shouldn't have. And occasionally I try to unmute some people. But for the most part, I've just gotten to, I don't see the nastiness. And I don't need the nastiness. And I know these clowns like to, you know, say I'm soft and this and that. Well, whatever makes them happy, it's fine. I couldn't care less. Let them yell in the dark. But there is a lot of good stuff going on, but there's a lot of noise. Listen, it's the same thing politically, same thing everywhere. All of this stuff, and Twitter's become an exaggeration because so many people are on it. But to me, it's no different than a cocktail party where, you know, three or four people are standing there having an interesting conversation and one drunk wanders in and starts to sort of talk too much. So one drunk joins and one of the smart people leaves. And then a second drunk shows up or a second dope shows up. And now another one of the people leave. And eventually it's just a bunch of, you know, people just screaming and yelling stupid stuff. And they forced all the people that's going to say away. And a little of that happens, right? It just gets overrun. And I understand why it happens. I just think it's unfortunate that people who have an interest in the game get so caught up in things that are just, they're wasting their time. They're just wasting their time. And frankly, if they think it's that fixed and they don't like it, then they should just abandon it. But they don't, because they like it a lot. So since they like it, why don't they try to find a way to figure out what's really going on? And then they'll appreciate the game even more. And I'm not trying to say, and you know, I'm the first one to be critical of everything. I'm more critical of stuff than anybody, or as critical as anybody. But I don't let it get in the way of trying to figure out what's going on in the game.
Right.
And I just think it's unfortunate. That's all. People do what they want, you know? I think that, you know, if people want to bet a certain way, they should bet the way that they think works for them. They shouldn't tell other people that there's no other way to play, because no successful person is going to actually say, I am the truth and the light. You know, I know that what they're going to say is, I found the way to play that works for me.
Well, the figs.
And a lot of it's about fun. Yes, there's always, and in theory, there is a potential way to maximize. But it's got to also work for you.
Yes.
You know, you could spread it into, you probably, your most, way you can maximize the most by spreading your, a horse you really like is and keying it in supers. But it's still a little tougher to hit. Maybe in a long, long, long run, it'll work out, it probably will work out better for you, assuming you actually have real handicapping acumen to beat the take, you know, not the takeout, but to help overcome it.
Right.
And the more slots you play, the more likely you are to overcome the takeout, despite the fact that these, you know, the more digit, you know, the more spots you go into, have higher takeouts. And that's why the takeout discussion obfuscates the real discussion, which is, you know, throwing the odds in your favor. And yeah, but you also have to be able to adapt to that emotionally. And maybe you are always better off betting your horse to win if it's enough for you, and you're not, and you're going to suffer emotionally if you don't get any money when the horse you like wins. There's still, you have to think about factors other than just mathematics. If you have enough money and you have the willpower, then it should just be about the math. But nothing's ever just about, so it's like analytics in sports, right?
Yeah.
Should it all be analytics?
Well, did you, you know, it's funny you make that reference, because I'm going to bring it up with Dave Hill on Thursday when we do our NFL piece. There was a player who had a five-piece parlay out of the weekend, and his fifth component was for last night's game, Miles Sanders over, I think, 110 yards. And they offered him, I forget who it was, I think it was FanDuel, offered him, the payout was $130,000, I think. They offered him $21,000 to buy out the ticket, and he took it, and it was, and ends up being smart, because Sanders, you know, didn't come close.
Right.
And I thought it was a really interesting equation about, you know, we don't talk about it too often anymore, it seems, just because pick sixes aren't the same that the way they used to be, about, you know, being live in the last leg and buying insurance. Remember, we used to have those insurance conversations. You don't see those as often anymore.
There's a lot of different discussions to be had about racing, and a lot of interesting, potentially helpful discussions to have. One of them is, an Irad let his brother win a race. I mean, I'm friendly with these guys. And so, yeah, I may have an inclination to want to defend them, but I do find it insulting that they're accused of cheating. Irad, but people haven't gotten enough evidence that Irad will do just about anything to win a race, and yet they think he's throwing races to let his brother win. Like, out of one side of their mouth, they're talking about how overly aggressive he is and he should be punished and he'll do anything to win, and then the other side of their mouth, they say, but he lets his brother win. Something's not right there. Okay, there's something that just doesn't make sense. It's just so funny, but it's first of all, listen, we all get our integrity impugned by dopes, and that's what it is. You can't do anything about it. It's never right to impugn somebody's integrity without evidence, but that's what people do, and that's what's happened, especially on social media. But nonetheless, it also doesn't make any sense. But beyond that, all you're really doing is spending a lot of time and energy on stuff that's not true, and you're wasting time that could be spent doing anything, whatever it is. But certainly in racing, you know, potentially making your game stronger and enjoying the game more.
Yeah.
But maybe some of these people, that's what they enjoy about the game, crying about riders that are cheating, that aren't cheating.
Well, and it's funny. You just got it. You just got a great. You'll see it in a minute when you look at Twitter. A friend Jeff talking about Alan Mews. He even remembers the day specifically.
Jeff knows everything,
right? But it did actually. It reminded me of a horse that came up. What's today? Tuesday. So it came up yesterday with Richie, and I wanted to bring him up with you because I knew his name, but I did not realize what a great career he had. Was Boomtowner.
Well, yeah, that was true. It was Mike Hushin, sure. Yeah, I'm sure Richie wrote him a lot.
And actually, Richie begged off of him, and
I feel like Frank Lovato
yep,
wrote him.
You're correct, and then Diane Nelson.
Was it Reappeal that Mike had? Was it Swayback?
See, no, this is.
I feel like you're Mike amazing. Took me and my ex girlfriend Hillary, whose birthday I forgot the other day, into the stall with him many years ago. It had to be 30 years ago.
Reappeal.
I think he was Sway. You can ask Richie, but I think he was a Swayback.
How about that? And he won 21 times in 84 starts.
That big Swayback, yeah.
How funny. It was bred by Harry Mangorian.
He was tough to ride. I'm sure Richie loved him because he's insane.
Well,
no challenge the Mig is enough.
Well, no, but Richie said he begged off. He begged off when he said that when Mike Hushin, when they claimed Boomtowner, he went and he said he begged off of him.
Well, Richie worked Tabasco cattle out early in his career. Speaking of
wow.
crazy horses,
wow,
yeah. Ask him about it.
I will actually. I don't think he's ever mentioned that.
Now you have something you can be prepared for with Richie.
Oh, you're so ridiculous.
What? I wouldn't use the term ridiculous.
You've come full circle.
All right, I do have to go. I got some stuff to do.
Well, you better go. You better go call Hillary and wish her a happy birthday.
I know.
You're a chicken in a pot, is what you are.
Thanks. I remembered on like Friday.
And then you forgot it when it counted.
That's okay.
Well, I've got a friend whose birthday is April 30th, and I'm at Derby every year, and it's touch and go every year. And if I forget her birthday, I get harangued.
Oh.
But it's so hard. It's April 30th. Someday, so this past year, I think it was on Oak Day.
You forget to prepare for your show. So why would you forget some people's birthdays?
Andy Serling, everybody, with a classic performance. Unbelievable. Listen, what am I gonna I was going to say to him, I knew if I had set him up, he would have. I was going to say, listen, they all can't be award winners. But, of course, none of them have been award winners. So, you know. So great. You know, let me see. Let me do some quick math. I'll tell you exactly. Here, Pat McKenna is going to join us, by the way. 250. That one actually, Case, mark that best of, because people will love hearing that over and over again. unbelievable, this guy. He's just amazing. Today, give or take, today we're getting close, let's say, to our 3,750th edition of this of these hijinks. That's pretty amazing, actually. So next year we probably hit 4,000, like 4,000 shows. I do see where a lot of people number, right? They number the shows. Well, I mean, it's 50. And by the way, I reminded Andy that he missed his friend Hillary's birthday, and I just reminded Casey that he's got a court date tomorrow that he'd forgotten about. so we're, you know, we've stumbled into a couple of fun topics and have been very helpful. 50 weeks a year times five, right? Yeah, so 250 basically 250. Let's round that down. Let's round it down to 240 because there are some occasions, right, that we have reasons that travel days here and there, give or take, that we lose. And I haven't had over the years. I haven't had too many sick days. I did have the eye. The eye was a disaster. And there was the week my mother died, and Seth hosted that week. So that's about 4 weeks worth. Lost a handful of days from my father. So, yeah, there's probably about a month's worth of that kind of stuff. I only missed, that was a Wednesday. So Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, right? I think I missed three shows for the heart attack. 240. So call it 240 times 15. That's 3,600. So 3,600. So I guess the 4,000 mark won't come until 2024. That's quite something, actually. Times 3 hours, right? 10,000 hours. 10,800. My point is, you know, they all can't be. Am I right? Or am I right? Or am I right? let's reach for Pat and see if he's ready. One of our mutual friends says about Andy, quote, he is impossible. Thank you. Thank you, Frederick. I guarantee you people have been yucking this up a great deal. All right, we will close out the morning. Then I have to go to Saratoga. Yeah, I got a lot. So many things to catch. You know, when you're away like that, 17 days or whatever it was. I got a bunch of things I got to do. You got banking. You got the dry cleaner. You got you name it. So there's no shortage of activities. Pat McKenna joins us from the New York Racing Association, and Pat, you're gonna certainly look forward to, because I know you were busy until now. You're gonna really look forward to Andy's visit today.
Enlighten me.
Oh, I can't do it justice. Believe me. He will.
What were the main points of discussion?
That I don't read books. That I was unprepared for his visit, and any number of others. Let's see what else. If it doesn't happen in New York, it didn't happen. this was a classic. And yet he still managed to go almost 45 minutes. So for somebody who seemed ready to hang up on me 3 minutes in, he ended up going long.
Did you just get off with him? Am I coming directly after that tour de force of an appearance?
No, there was an intermezzo where I recorded. I basically was saying, you know, when you do 750 hours a year of radio, that they all can't be, you know, virtuosos, mm-hmm. essentially. I should have said to him, I said, is every hour of America's Day at the Races? I mean, come on. It's, you know, not every race is going to thrill the audience. And I don't know. I in the meantime, I think people like when I'm blind without a cane.
Yeah. I mean, it probably makes for good radio. Who am I to judge?
What happens sometimes? There were literally two other visits that I thought were happening this morning, and there are there's occasions where those fall through, and you can't I can't conjure up.
I'm often reminded that things happen in life that are well outside of our control, and it's always helpful to remember that. Kids get sick, people need to go to the doctor, cars break down, things still happen.
Exactly. Exactly. Pandemics.
Yeah, that. How quickly we forget. But anyway.
Well, it was funny because I reached out to you, I don't know, an hour ago when a couple of topics came up that I said, oh, this would be good for Pat McKenna. And then you said, what are we talking about? And I said, well, I can't remember now. So this is the kind of morning it's been. No, there were two things that came up, and you actually answered one off air. But our friend Jeff asked about he's been looking for the 2023 yep. calendar, and sure. It doesn't exist except for Saratoga, because we always know what the 40 days are going to be at Saratoga.
Yeah. No, it's a good question. It's a reasonable question, and I'm happy to help. So the 2023 calendar of live race dates has not been released as of yet. We are awaiting the final approvals. It is a process, like so much of what we do at NYRA, that requires the involvement of NYFA, of the New York Thoroughbred Breeders, and of the New York State Gaming Commission. So it's a collaboration that ends up with the Gaming Commission, and we hope to be able to get those dates out in the very near future. But yeah, first and foremost, Belmont Spring Summer will be held at Belmont Park as it was originally designed. The Belmont Stakes will be run at Belmont Park, and that's because the tunnel project is proceeding rapidly. You know, they've made tremendous progress over the last 3 months. The warm fall really helped Glenn and his team to the point where, you know, they're going to be reconstructing the tracks themselves here in the coming weeks, not months. So that's a great thing. Saratoga will look just like it has since 2019, 40 live race days, 5-day weeks, with Mondays and Tuesdays dark, Wednesdays through Sundays. So again, that's a formula that clearly has proven to be remarkably successful. The business metrics are as good as they've ever been, record-breaking handle in 3 out of the 4 years. And it's, you know, having gone to Saratoga my whole life, you may agree, you may not, but last summer really felt like the excitement, the enthusiasm was at an all-time high. I said it, I believe it, you know, because it really felt like that day to day. You know, we're lucky to be able to experience the rhythm of a full Saratoga race meet, and it opened strong and it really never waned. You know, the hot, dry weather certainly had something to do with that, but it was a really fantastic summer up there. And as the old adage goes, why screw with a really good thing? So that's where we are for Saratoga. There was some conversation, especially upstate, around extending it on either side because of, you know, the Belmont Capital Improvement Project, but that's not, certainly not in 2023. Saratoga will look just like it did last summer, and it should be great. And we're always thinking about Saratoga and Belmont, even though here we are in the midst of the Aqueduct Fall Meet.
I appreciate that. And then I was actually surprised yesterday, and since Saratoga is kind of carved out in stone, I was a little surprised when I got that email from, you know, essentially from group sales. And it was confirmed by our friend Leslie that this does seem early. The opportunity, Pat, to get 2023 premium seating for the meet. And I don't ever remember this coming out earlier.
I would clarify. This is the standard timeline. Generally,
is it?
It might not. Yeah. Well, this is not premium seating. These are seasonal.
Right.
Seasonal boxes.
Yes.
in either the stretch or the 1863. So that's a very specific subset of fans and customers.
Agreed.
I mean, that is a process that plays out year round because of the financial commitment that's involved in a seasonal corporate box in either one of those locations.
Well, and I bring it up because as it happens, over the course of the Breeders' Cup week and then subsequently the sale, I had a couple of people literally come up to me and say, you know, we're thinking of coming to Saratoga for the season. And, you know, they were inquiring. You know, it's funny. The first order of business that everybody thinks about is housing because, you know, that if you're going to come for 8 weeks, you've got to find a place to stay. But this is something that, you know, as you mentioned, let's be honest, the carriage trade, they would be interested in getting out in front of.
Yeah, I mean, our sales office is always ready to assist if you're looking to purchase a seasonal accommodations in either one of those premium locations.
And then this is the stretch and the 1863. And what is the timetable, Pat, for the other, you know, for the other various accommodations?
Yeah, I mean, I want to say we start in on that inventory in February or March. So there's plenty of time. And then the daily sales, daily tables doesn't go on sale until the spring.
Right.
So there's plenty of time there, but these are conversations that are pretty involved with, you know, potential clients at that seasonal level.
Nice. All right. I just was speculating. I was like, I don't ever remember this early. I mean, usually by January, I start to see those, you know, those smoke signals. And I always bring it up to people because nobody wants to be disappointed, you know, to find out, you know, a week, 2 weeks after some of these, you know, some of these openings, to then
sure.
reach out and get shut out, essentially.
No, I'm glad you asked. I'm glad you got the question and that we could hopefully clarify it for your listeners.
Outstanding. And I'd love to say, Pat, that I haven't seen you since Saratoga, obviously, and because I haven't been down. I traveled immediately in September out of town to Kentucky and then had a little, you know, got to come home and kiss Tina and then back out on the road to Kentucky another.
And, right. You know, I'll say that the Belmont at the Big Amy gave yeah. people the opportunity to visit Aqueduct who'd either never been there,
right.
in the case of a few people I'm thinking of that was surprising, or hadn't been there in, you know, 20, 30, 40 or however long, people were pleasantly surprised by the Aqueduct experience. New Owner's Lounge is a great place to spend, you know, an afternoon or a few races when it's, you know, we obviously had a beautiful warm fall, and to be outside, you know, the racetracks are as good as any racetracks in America, according to the jockeys and the trainers that are using them every day. So, you know, we love Aqueduct. Obviously our goal is to consolidate racing downstate to one facility. We hope and are optimistic that is a new Belmont Park as a year-round location. But that does not mean that we don't appreciate and love everything Aqueduct has to offer. So, you know, I'll say that. And that's rank and file NIRA employees. I think there's a population of horsemen that appreciate what Aqueduct is. It's an urban racetrack. It's New York City's racetrack. It's very different than Belmont or Saratoga, but what makes it different also makes it special. So we always appreciate being at the Big A.
Big time. And getting ready, hoping to get our filly, get her debut in soon, and looking forward to coming down, Pat. Won't talk to you probably ahead of Thanksgiving, so best to you and the family.
So we normally discuss Thanksgiving preferences. I feel like there are side dish conversations.
There always is. Well, and that's why it's not unusual that you're on. We will have our man. We'll have Neil Kleinberg. Neil's going to visit, in fact, as soon as even this week, but usually, you know, maybe we'll see, either now or maybe Monday or Tuesday. But, yeah, you're a mashed potato guy.
Yeah, pretty basic. Mashed potatoes, stuffing, gravy, you know, a few other things. It's funny, my daughter, for whatever reason, we can't quite figure it out, has become obsessed with marshmallows because she swears that her grandmother made some marshmallow dish last year or the year before. She's five, so her memory is pretty scattered. But no one can quite remember the marshmallow dish, but the obsession is fully in place.
That is great. Do you need me to send you a something with marshmallow in it?
No, I had to buy a bag of marshmallows the other day because I was in the grocery store and we passed by and there was no getting by them without throwing them in the cart.
Well, marshmallows have come a long way in recent years. Now there's flavored marshmallows.
They're vegan marshmallows.
Well, that's just wrong. But okay.
Yeah.
Pat McKenna, everybody. PC McKenna. Pat, thanks for the on-the-fly visit.
Thanks, Steve.
Happy Thanksgiving. Unbelievable. Pat McKenna, everybody, and Andy Serling and Dave Grenick, Tony Lacey from Keeneland. That's our show for today. back tomorrow. Thanks, Case. Tomorrow will be interesting. We're going to, our man Brian Dorenzo is going to do some engineering while Casey's at that court date. So we'll see. I'll see you then. Plenty of action today if you're looking. How about Indy and Remington, Finger Lakes, Mahoning, Mountaineer, Parks, Penn, Turf Paradise, Will Rogers, and Zia. Talk to you tomorrow, everybody. Thanks.
At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.